Overcoming lust and temptation. When we withdraw from our habits and are able to stay sexually sober from some length of time, we discover that even though we may not be acting out our compulsion, the obsession is still with us, though it may seem to disappear for a time. Lust, as we have seen, assumes many disguises, which we begin to recognize in sobriety as time goes on. For one person, lust may be lusting after someone. For another, it may be the obsession to be lusted after. For yet another, lust may appear as a desperate sexual or emotional need for someone. In any case, it's the inner disposition of the heart that's the real problem. And the work of recovery continues with altered attitudes and gaining progressive victory over lust. Lust only yields to that slow, patient working of the program in the context of others who are doing the same. This is one reason we need the fellowship of sobriety on a continuing basis. The rewards are unending, giving us the true freedom we always wanted. In the following piece, a member tells how he overcame his obsession with lust. For many, these suggestions have proven to be useful in maintaining sobriety and overcoming lust and temptation. It's entitled, How I Overcame My Obsession with Lust. How did I do it? I didn't. A woman in AA told me after she spoke in a meeting, quoting Chapter 5 in Alcoholics Anonymous, that God could and would if he were sought. And that's how I did it, by letting God do it, because I couldn't. But God could and would and did. But I had to go to meetings to learn things like that. Meetings, 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 meetings. That's what they told me. Just keep bringing the body, work the steps, work the steps, work the steps, go to meetings, working the steps. That's how I did it. That's how I learned to let the grace of God enter, to expel the obsession. And here's what worked for me. One, stop practicing the compulsion. I stopped acting out sexually in all forms, any forms, including sex with myself and non-marital relationships. There could be no relief from the obsession of lust while still practicing the acts of lust. Two, stop feeding the obsession. This meant eliminating from what was under my control all printed and visual materials and other symbols of my tyranny. I had to stop feeding my lust by looking around, my use of television, movies, and music, and by using and listening to the language of lust. I also had to stop living only and always inside my own head. That's one of the great fringe benefits of going to a lot of meetings. Most of us sexaholics really live on the inside of our heads. We're seldom in the real world. Three, participate in the fellowship of the program. I don't know of anyone who can stay sober and free of the obsession of lust without such fellowship. I couldn't. Fellowship is where the action is, where the magic is, the connection is, where feeling part of is. At first, all I could do was attend meetings. Then I followed the suggestion of getting involved in the mechanics of meetings, setting up, cleaning up, holding jobs, literature chairman, treasurer, secretary. Getting involved made me feel I could be part of instead of apart from my old nemesis. Later, I would be able to go out for coffee, start meeting with others one-on-one, and begin the painful but necessary process of growing up by coming out. Four, admit powerlessness. At the very beginning, all I could do when the compulsion struck was cry out, I'm powerless. Please help me. Sometimes 100 times a day. Powerlessness was the most beautiful word in the world to me as I was coming to experience the first step at depth. It still is. Later, I would discover that I was really powerless over me. The more I had fought lust before, the more it fought back. All my willpower seemed to empower lust rather than hold it in check. Reading step 1 in the 12 and 12 helped me see that my powerlessness was the firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built, page 21. I finally stopped trying to stop. Only by admitting lust's power over me to others in the fellowship could I receive power over my lust. 5, surrender. That word again. Without surrender, mere admission of powerlessness fails to connect us with our higher power. At first, for me, it was surrender to the group where I began attending meetings. This was simply going to the meetings and being as honest, open-minded, and willing as I could. This was how I came to experience that second step and have hope that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. This was what prepared the way for the third step surrender later on, when it would be to God as I understood him. As far as my lust was concerned, I knew exactly what surrender meant and what I had to do. Every time I was tempted from within or without, I'd say, I surrender the right to lust after this person. Please take it away. And like it says, God could and would and did. I may have had some discomfort or fear, may have had to repeat the surrender over and over again, but it worked. It felt scary at first, but I was staying sober, and it was slowly getting easier, one temptation at a time. 6, bring the inside out. As I began to see that I would apparently never be cured of the possibility of lusting, I had to bring other steps to bear on me. And steps 4 and 5 opened the door to being able to look at myself critically. This was probably the most important change of attitude in my early recovery. But with lust, I had to keep taking mini inventories, as suggested in the 5th and 10th steps. Whenever I felt some experience, image, memory, or thought was controlling me, as was often the case, I'd bring it to the light, talking it out with another programmed person. Get the air, the sunlight on it. Lust hates the light and flees from it. It loves those dark, secret recesses of my being. And once I let it lodge there, it's like a fungus and starts flourishing. Athlete's foot of the soul. But as soon as I bring it to the light, exposing it to another recovering sexaholic, the power that it has over me is broken. Light kills lust. I did this with specific experiences, not generalities. Sometimes it meant imposing on a person's time, but it cleaned me out and kept me sober. Every time I talked it out in surrender, the power of that memory or experience was broken. Another new and powerful breakthrough. 7, trust. As I was able more and more to live above my lust, learning to trust more and more in God's power to expel the obsession, I soon learned to begin each day with a prayer of putting myself and my lust in God's hands just for that day. This meant I was learning to live without lust and really wanted to be free of it. Now I begin each day with the third step prayer from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 63, changing the wording to suit my own case. It usually goes something like this. Please keep me sober from my lust today, because I can't. I offer you my will and life today, to do and build with as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self today, that I may better do your will. Take away my difficulties today, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of your great power, love, and way of life. Give me what I need today. Thy will, not mine, be done today. 8, use the literature of the program. The 12 and 12 in Alcoholics Anonymous were my first guides in working the steps. Again and again, I found what I needed in those original documents that launched the 12-step program. Many of us now find that working the principles outlined in our SA literature adds another dimension and is very helpful. Using it in the solitude and privacy of our own quiet times, We gain insights about ourselves and our recovery in a way uniquely suited to who and where we are. 9. Go to work on the other defects. I discovered to my utter amazement that lust was not my root problem at all. It was just another symptom of my underlying spiritual illness, diseased attitudes. Lust was just one more manifestation of this huge negative force within me that had to bust out any way it could. As soon as lust started to go, resentment started taking its place. Then fear, then a judging spirit. It was like trying to stop a leak in a dam. While you're trying to plug up one hole, it springs a leak somewhere else because there's this huge body of water behind the dam and its pressure is going to make it break out at the weakest spot. This huge body of water, it turns out, is the destructive negative side of me. And the degree to which I can connect into the positive power, God, is the degree to which I disconnect from the negative in all its forms. Thank God today I have a choice. The fringe benefit of having to work on my defects to rid myself of the obsession of lust is finally being able to plug into life. But I can't be free of any obsession while I'm drunk on another. I can't be free of lust while drunk on resentment, and so on. So I went to step meetings to learn how others were actually getting victory over their defects. I was told that one of the best ways to nip a resentful thought in the bud is to pray for the person I resented. Ask for them what you want for yourself. It worked. My first employer in sobriety was the object of scores of such prayers daily. They didn't seem to do him much good. Who knows? But they kept me from falling into the snake pit of resentment.